Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gentle Healing Group. We are here for, let me look at my cheat sheet here, tell you what week we are on. I think it's, this is week 27, which means we are across the halfway point now for the first year. So we've been doing this for 6 months. And, of course, as you know, this past week we did lessons 167 through 173, so we're not quite halfway through the course because we've spent some time doing some lessons for 2 days. But we are have been doing this for 6 months, so we're halfway through our first year. And I don't know how many years this will last. We'll see. Two, maybe three, we'll see what happens. It just depends on how long you all hang in there and how long there is something to share. But those of you who are still here, who began on January 10th and are still here, congratulations on making it for 6 months. All right, so let me play an opening song. Tonight, when I get to my part of the sharing, and I'm going to share again from the Untethered Soul, I'm going to be reading from chapter 8, which is about fear. And so when I was looking for a song to play, this song came into my mind. This is one of my favorite songs about fear. It's also always been one of Jasmine's favorite spiritual songs. And it's by Karen Drucker, and it is called Relax, Let Go.
All is well.
I'm glad.
Kind of a fun song. Maybe you can see why it's one of Jasmine's favorite spiritual songs. It has a little groove to it. So we are now at the part of the meeting where you all get to share and I get to listen. So this week you get to share regarding your experience with workbook lessons 167 through 173 and also the audio on root cause inquiry. Also, if you did any root cause inquiries this week and if you're willing to share, would love to hear your root cause inquiries. If you have any questions about root cause inquiry, we'd love to answer those questions. Or if there's just anything else in general that you would like to share about your process. For example, I saw Doreen made a very interesting post about her experience with the Ku Klux Klan in her town this week. So if she wanted to share that or if anybody else has anything they would like to share, all of that is welcome. So, who would like to share? Let's see, I noticed we have from Nightly Candle. Let's see, oh, this is Star Child, so probably not. Star Child, he is not doing the gentle healing, I don't think. So I'll skip that comment. Hi, Star Child. So who is doing gentle healing and would like to share? All right, Ken, the mic is yours.
Well, we had an interesting happening this week. We were out Saturday morning and had lunch at the local barbecue place, Adam's Rib, and came home and found this dent and the garage door, and it was over towards the edge, and I looked at it and go, looks like the right height for somebody backing into the garage door, but our driveway is shaped where you have to intentionally come down this driveway, and I still couldn't figure out how it was created. And there was a car parked off to the side of the road with the missing front wheel. So Becky called the sheriff. They came out, did their report, and as they were leaving, our neighbor came over and said, would you like to know what happened? And we're all going, yeah. Well, the tire from the car came off and rolled across the ground and hit the garage door. And the people in the car walked away. So the sheriff left, looked at the car lights, found the location, and came back a half hour later with the young man and his father, young man who had been driving the car, and the sheriff said, you have two choices. I can arrest him for a felony because the damage to the garage door was over $1,000. You can work it out between you. And I said, well, much rather work it out because the chances of him helping the owner of this house pay for the repairs was zero if he went to jail. And so we got all the information and he left, and the officer told him, you will need to remove your car or I will have to have it towed. Well, anybody that's ever had their car towed, found out later, it's $162 to have the car towed plus $30 a day storage. And this young man was freshly unemployed, had no auto insurance, so it was kind of the rock we were trying to squeeze blood from. So Sunday morning I was sitting here doing my admin duties during the Sunday morning gathering, and I looked out at this car sitting there with its axle in the ground, and the flash of insight came, and it was, you have AAA, why don't you offer to tow it for Nan so he doesn't basically lose the car? And I said, okay, I have his phone number, I'll call him. And before my shift was up, about 10 minutes before my shift was up, here comes the young man, his aunt and uncle, his cousin, and a friend. And they're trying to jack this car up. I walked out, offered AAA, and they just all stared at me. Huh? I said, you know, random act of kindness. Pay it forward. And in listening to the audio yesterday that we played from Holy Spirit Guides, that was one of the things that Regina talked about, was viewing all of our brothers as awake and just going through their experiences. And that random acts of kindness were something that we should look for opportunities. So the tow truck driver came, and he's looking at me like, you're doing what? You're giving up your tow for the next 12 months for somebody you don't know? And it was the most wonderful feeling, because I pretty much will never see this guy again. That was just a wonderful feeling to have that guidance and follow through with this random act of kindness, which I know is one of the vibes doing this work, the growth. And because Becky is commenting here, I wouldn't have done it years ago. So, yeah, that's it. Cheryl, the ripple effect, the pay it forward phenomenon, that who knows what seeds I planted, and you know, it doesn't matter, that wasn't why I did it, it was just that random act of kindness. Releasing the mic.
Thank you, Ken, for reminding us all, you know, it's much, much better to be kind than whatever its opposite might be, you know, to be, I don't know, angry, I guess is the word I'll pick right now. Of course, there's probably other things, you know, but to be angry and to hold a grievance, much better to be kind. So thank you for reminding us all, and we'll imitate you when our opportunities arise. All right, Stephen, the mic is yours.
Oh, I finally got it. I'm in trouble on my computer. Hey, everybody. Hi, Nancy. Okay, Ken, thank you for a great story. I think I know what it feels like, more from the criminal's perspective that wrecked the garage than from your perspective, but I could be part of that story in feeling that. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about was the root cause inquiry that was part of the homework this week. And I had some resistance to it, just because I've heard it before. Oh, not that I don't think it's fabulous and all that. I've just heard it several times before. I've suggested to some of the people I'm in contact with that they listen to it. You know, it could be very helpful and all that. And anyway, I wanted to do the homework so I could talk tonight, because talking on this format, another thing that I wanted to talk about. But anyway, back to root cause. So, just one thing. As I was listening to it, Regina, you were talking about the part where you were talking about temperature. You don't like to be cold and you don't like to be hot. I mean, I'm condensing it all down. I was just laughing to myself because the people in the 12-step program I work with say stuff like that all the time. I'm thinking, I would say then, why the hell would you live in Colorado? You know, hotter than hell in the summer and freezing cold in the winter. Anyway, just it's kind of a 12-step joke. It doesn't matter. Oh, so anyway, before I listened to it, which was early this morning, I just finished a conversation with Nance. We read the lesson together every morning, and I thought, I'm not going to let the day get away from me by not doing this. And I recognize some resistance to hearing it and paying attention to it. So I had kind of a prayer that I just wanted an open mind and to be open for a new experience with hearing the root cause again. And boy, I got it. It was fabulous. So I really, and what it brought up, something very current. I haven't done a root cause on it yet, on paper. I'm not skilled enough with it. There's no way I'm skilled enough to just go through it in my mind. But at least I discovered what needs a root cause inquiry. And for years, there's been people in my life that I would complain to Nancy about, and I would say, and the complaint's always the same. I would say, the latest person, I'll just make up a name for him and call him Chuck. He won't shut up when I talk to him. He calls me and he says, Steve, I got this problem. Can you help me with it? And honest to God, I could go mow the lawn and come back, and he wouldn't have paused for one word from me. And yes, I was upset. And now remember, for the last 10 years, there's been somebody in my life that I would have the same complaint about. They're calling me. Remember, I'm not calling them. And they're calling me because they say they want to hear something from me, and then they just won't shut up. We can go literally, so no exaggeration here, we can be on the phone for an hour, and I don't know if I would have said five words. And often when they hang up, they say, hey, thanks so much, you know, I appreciate the time you've given me, and, you know, I haven't said anything. So anyway, same old complaint to Nancy. You know, God damn it, this, you know, sometimes, which I don't like, I have actually yelled into the phone. I've actually talked about this before when we were in NTI, but it happened again today. I listened to the root cause. I asked for a new experience, and this guy I'm calling Chuck called me, and it's a small thing. And he hangs up, and like 6 seconds later, I'm on the phone to Nancy. You know, she's at work. I'm not at work. I'm at home. She doesn't have better things to do than listen to complaint for the 10,000th time. But I felt a real peace with it today because it's almost as like Spirit saying, you know, however thick in the head you are, Steve, I'm going to keep presenting an opportunity for you to heal some false beliefs that you have. So I just know that I have some beliefs that I think are true and they're not. And I'm going to do something about it because I don't want them. And then, of course, in our review lessons, God is but love, and therefore so am I. You would have said I disguised who I am very cleverly if you would hear me complaining about another person. And so I'm going to put pen to paper and see what I see. I don't know what it's going to end up being right now, but I've had enough prompts to do this. And Regina, just having been assigned that this week, for me, it worked out well because I'm not interested in avoiding this anymore. I'm interested in being free of it. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, thank you very much, Stephen. And, you know, during the audio, someone asked me, because I was talking about, you know, how I didn't like being too hot and I didn't like being too cold. And someone asked me, can't you just accept, you know, that you don't like being too cold? And that, you know, that's one of the things we really want to pay attention to. Obviously, we want to accept that it is cold. Might even need to accept that the dog wants to take a walk in the cold, right? But we don't want to, I mean, we don't want to not accept them. I don't know how to say this, but we don't want to just accept our upsets without investigating them, because that allows things to remain hidden, right? So, of course, we're going to accept that we're upset, right? But we want to take that step and investigate them. And that's how what's really going on gets uncovered. I'm sure you heard that in the audio. So thank you, Stephen, for being willing to investigate your upsets when you're talking about Chuck. This came into my mind. Chuck, Bobuck, Banana Fanafo. Okay, Doreen, the mic is yours.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? Great. That was really cute, Regina. So I'm going to share what I actually posted in the Facebook group and what my experience attending the KKK rally that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia. This past weekend, and as I share, I'll just offer some commentary. It was a very rich experience for me, and I do feel like a lot of it is still unfolding with insight for me. So, this is what I wrote. On Friday, I found myself pretending that I was not feeling some level of anxiety with the KKK rally in my town the next day. And I just want to say, you know, when I said I found myself pretending, the spiritual ego was telling me that during you're a spiritual student, you're okay with this, you have no anxiety. And I had to, I think during the day on Friday, I acknowledged, you know what, you are feeling some anxiety. and I had, you know, and then I was like, okay, I'm for some anxiety. And as it got towards the end of the day, I decided that I needed to, or I wanted to reach out to a friend who, can hold it in a way that I needed that to be held, at that point. And I actually did text a friend of mine, seeing that if wanting to know she would join me for dinner, even though it was really late that day, or late for most people to go out to dinner. But I tried anyway. Did not hear from her, so I went out myself. So I'm reading, I'll continue on. I said, I think I was what tipped me over was when I heard that they would be armed. I didn't leave my home until about 7:30 p.m. to get something to eat. The heightened presence of the police driving around town felt strange, feeling both grateful and concerned. What I mean by that, I was like grateful that there was some level of protection, but also concerned that there was police, there was a situation that existed that would need that that amount of police officers driving around. However, in the midst of this, I still felt a current of peace and all was well. And I actually went to Sticks that night, a restaurant here, and I actually sat outside, and it was dark. There's a couple of people there, but I just sat outside, and I had remembered, you know, the lesson for the day. So as I ate, I pulled out my iPad to review the paragraphs I highlighted for the day, which was lesson 169. And it did give me a great deal of comfort. And the passage that I read over and over was, grace is acceptance of the love of God within a world of seeming hate and fear. By grace alone, the fate and fear, the hate and fear are gone. For grace presents a state so opposite to everything the world contains, that those whose minds are lighted by the gift of grace cannot believe the world of fear is real. And I really resonated with this passage, really, you know, this whole statement, but by grace alone, the hate and fear are gone. And grace, and, you know, reading grace is the acceptance of the love of God. And so I just focused on that. I read it, and I just kind of, you know, just was breathing that in. And then after, I don't know how long it maybe was doing that, maybe a couple, maybe about 10 minutes, maybe something like that, you know, that feeling just dissipated, that anxiety just dissipated, and I was peaceful again. And so as I lingered on, I actually went ahead and read the entire lesson that day too, not just this paragraph that night. And then my friend texted late and said that she was not too far away and it was too late for dinner, but she really wanted to have for me to drink somewhere close by. Cause, she had just come from a planning meeting of these people who were doing a lot of activities to provide alternative things to do on Saturday. And she was part of that team and she really needed to decompress from that experience. And so we met and it was great. We met for about a half an hour. She is what I needed. I was what she needed. And so it was just perfect. So, and then later that night, as I was reading, I was on Facebook and I was reading some things and I discovered about the, clergy collective that was actually praying at the site where the KKK was going to do the rally. And right then and there, I knew that was something I wanted to participate in. So anyway, the next morning, the day of the rally, I read lesson 170, which ended with this prayer. Father, we are like you. No cruelty abides in us, for there is none in you. Your peace is ours, and we bless the world with what we have received from you alone. We choose again and make our choice for all our brothers, knowing they are one with us. We bring them your salvation as we have received it now, and we give thanks for them who render us complete. In them we see your glory. In them we find our peace. Holy are we because your holiness has set us free. And we give thanks. Amen. And so I was, when I read that morning, I was like, oh my God, Spirit is so with me right now. Because I can't believe how perfect this was for the experience that was happening that day for me. And I also wanted to point out, you know, people sharing a lot of spiritual things and then they speak about the individuals who may not be on quote unquote the right path or in their terminology and how they're speaking about it. And I just wanted to emphasize that, you know, I kept wanting to bring it all back to me. I kept wanting to, like, no cruelty abides in us. You know, I needed to say that about me, that no cruelty abides in me. And though I might think that there might be some cruelty in me, so I was really trying to point it all directed to me. A lot of times, what I was witnessing and what I was noticing, a lot of people was putting so much on the KKK and the hate that they feel that the KKK was emanating or bringing to this community. So that morning, I participated in a community meditation and attended a short gospel concert, which was all part of the activities of these alternative things to do that day. And then I heard that a clergy collective was praying in the park where the rally would take place later that day. I felt guided to go there and offered the passage and the prayer I wrote above. So I, as I joined the prayer circle that was happened to be there at when I went to the park, it was, you know, I guess not really ironic, but, you know, they kept talking about grace and peace, and somebody had a question about grace towards the end of the circle, and so I was like, what I had written or what I, you know, read early, both the first passage was about grace, the second passage, the prayer, was about peace. So I was able to share that in that circle. And then I ended up sitting under a tree, meditating, contemplating, and observing for probably about an hour and a half. And that was really revealing. It was really interesting because, you know, there were a lot of people doing the same thing in their own way. You know, there was maybe two other prayer circles from different religious groups that showed up. There was a singing circle, probably affiliated with a church group or a spiritual group. There was, I'm going to say, a group of hippies that came in with drumming and singing and offering different things to people. I had someone dressed in a loincloth that offered me a little tiny crystal. And there was the police officers. And, you know, as I sat there was more of them just gradually increasing. And then, obviously, there were reporters that were gradually showing up, too, and a lot of reporters that were not from here. So... But as I was observing all this and as I went to meditation, I had two people join me in the meditation on the ground, and we sat there, and I just felt tremendous peace. It was just really, really peaceful. And I remembered, the experience reminded me of a dream that I had when I was in my 20s. Which I think is a dream about my own spiritual journey, but it was basically my backyard was in, and there was all these different groups trying to do things to open the gates of heaven. And as I was observing all these people doing all these things, you know, in their own way, that's what it felt like I was witnessing this, whatever we do to... Whatever we do, whatever, you know, me sitting there contemplating or meditating, joining the prayer group, the other prayer groups, the singing, the offering of crystals, the policemen and whatever their duty was, we're all just trying to do things to reach the opening of that gate, of heaven's gate in whatever way we understand that. And so it was just really interesting to witness that. Oh, just one second here. I lost my way on my computer. Okay. So, let's look. Okay, I left as more people started to enter the park. And then that was just about 3 hours before the rally would start. And I have to say that while I was sitting there, the spiritual ego also entered because again, I was saying, you know, a spiritual student does not participate in these rallies. You know, you're come to do the spiritual thing, Doreen. You're going to pray. You're going to do. You are not going to participate in this rally. So, you know, when it starts to shift and change, it's time for you to go. But there was also a part of me saying, Doreen, you really could sit here and stay here throughout the entire thing. So, but at some point, I decided to leave. And so I walked away, and still in my downtown area, and I went to, I eventually ended up at another concert, which is still was still in walking distance, but not at the rally. And once I sat down at the concert, something told me, like, this is not where you're supposed to be, need to go back. So it's like, okay. So I went back. And that's when I said I had no intentions of being there, but that's when I went back. Okay, so I said I had no intention to return to the rally, however I did. And there was the energy of what, you know, we call hate coming from both sides, not just the KKK, but also those who oppose the KKK. I mean, there was just a lot of hate, a lot of that energy of hate. And I really, like, what I would do is I would go to the front line, so to speak, and be in the midst of it and observe it and, like, just looking around. And then I would pull myself out of it. And then I would go back and I would pull myself out of it. And I'd go back and I would pull myself out of it. And so, and I have to say, as I was writing this post, yesterday, is when some guidance came to me. It says, as I write this, my guidance is telling me that there is no hate, only varying degrees of suffering as we each find our way to the truth. I also observe varying degrees of compassion, varying degrees of acceptance, varying degrees of expressed love, varying degrees of kindness, varying degrees of conviction, varying degrees of fear, varying degrees of commitment, varying degrees of support, varying degrees of looniness, varying degrees of sadness, varying degrees of felt connectedness, varying degrees of openness. And as I started all those, I realized that that is me. I said, what is dawning on me now is that I saw myself. I saw myself at a KKK rally. It's funny. I saw myself, the little S. All these varying degrees exist in me at this moment. All those things, you know, this commitment that seems to waver back and forth, support, conviction, compassion, they waver. And so I also saw and felt myself, the big S. The constant, unchanging, peaceful presence, no matter what was happening. It's hard for me while I was there, but I was in the midst of it, but I also felt like I was in a bubble protecting me from it as well. Or, I don't know if protecting me is the right word, but I didn't feel, at any time that I was there, did I feel unsafe. I never felt unsafe. And, yeah, and it's a weird feeling. And then the spiritual ego comes in and says, Doreen, you're just being naive. You're not really seeing what's really happening. And so I go back, but I did feel safe. So it's an interest. I'm so grateful for the experience because I see that so clearly, and I see how the micro and the macro, you know, like everything that was in me was on display at this KKK rally, and everything in that KKK rally is inside of me. So yeah, it was just an experience, and I later wrote, I'm grateful to have witnessed this event, and I'm grateful to have enough awareness to hold it in a grounded and sacred way. So I just want to say thank you to everybody, because I would not have seen this way or even approached it in this way. And I am really grateful that I followed the inner guidance to go to the rally, because I was really sold on not going, because I was like, you know, don't give it attention or don't, you know. My guidance told me to go, and so I'm grateful that I did. So anyway, that's my experience, and I'm letting go. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing, Doreen. And, you know, you started off by saying that, you know, you noticed, let's see if I can remember your exact words, you caught yourself pretending, I think. You caught yourself pretending that you weren't anxious. And that's very important for all of us, to catch ourselves when that spiritual ego, right, is fooling us. Also, you commented on how there is no cruelty in God and none in me. And that's also very important for all of us to realize, is that there is no cruelty in our nature. And there is no cruelty in anyone else's nature. If we see something that appears to be cruelty, that's just the mistake of believing thoughts and acting them out. That has nothing to do with the nature, because the nature of all people is the same. And there is no cruelty. In fact, God is but love, and so am I, right? But I also loved your sharing about how you noticed that everything that you were witnessing there is within your small self as well. And I love the fact that you called a KKK rally a sacred event and had gratitude for going. So thank you for everything. That was a beautiful, beautiful sharing. And Nancy, you are up next.
Okay, can you hear me? For some reason. Now, okay. I'm so sorry. Oh, you think I never did this before, but okay. I think I have the mic now, and it's locked, so I don't have to hold it down. So let me know if you hear dead air. But yeah, Doreen, thank you for that. I loved how the daily lesson over the course of the few days that you were in that space really spoke to your experience. I love it when that happens. It really shows me that that we are not alone, that we are accompanied. We have a mighty companion. So I wanted to just comment on root cause inquiry as well. I listened to the recording, I knew I was going to do it, and I think I had a little bit of a, I was like, oh, I've heard this before. I've heard this before, but I'll listen again. And I did listen again, and I, without too much hassle from myself, but root cause inquiry is something that I do use, because it seems to be the one process for me that I turn to. It's the one I go to most often. It seems, you know, I've done Byron Katie worksheets before, and those are great. And I've done the Choose Again a little bit, Rules for Decision a little bit. But there's the root cause inquiry seems to really help me go. It's like being in an elevator that takes me down at least as far as I've been able to go, and it's been really helpful. So I'm going to share one that I did. It wasn't actually this past week. It was right before Stephen and I went to Maui. So it was a couple of weeks ago, but it was a good one. And I've shared it with Stephen already, actually, when it happened. But so Stephen and I decided to go to Maui kind of at the last minute, like only a week or a week and a half before we actually left. And it, going away together to Maui was something we've done for about 5 years, and we're both looking forward to it very much and planning for it and talking about it. And then a couple of days before we left, one of Stephen's daughters texted him and said, how would you like it if Elle, who is Stephen's 19-year-old granddaughter and the daughter of this daughter that was texting Stephen, how would you like to spend, how about if Elle came and joined you for 2 days while you're in Maui for some special grandpa time? And he had forwarded me that text, okay, and all he had time to do was forward me the text. And he also replied in another text that he said so many ways to answer, but I think I'll just stick with good going and great. So then he went on with his day. I did not realize that he was responding to an earlier text of mine that had nothing to do with the text that his daughter had sent asking if Elle could go. So I just saw a text with Stephen's daughter asking if the granddaughter could join us for a couple of days, and Stephen said yes. Okay, that was the story in my mind. And I became very upset. I was at work, and I was just inside. I was just like, you know, white lights going off. I was indignant. I was angry. And it was kind of laughable how upset I was. You know, this was our first vacation and together in a long time. We have a studio apartment. Why do I want to share it with a teenage girl? Blah, blah, blah. I was just, I had no problem. You know, it was like a Gatling gun full of all the reasons why, and, you know, how dare this daughter or this granddaughter invite herself through her mother. I had all kinds of stories coming up, and I did not see at all what the root was until, of course, I used root cause. I actually talked to Stephen that afternoon, just to shorten this share a little bit. Stephen let me know that all he had done was forward that text. He had not replied to Kara at all. He was replying the great and good going was to a separate text of mine. They're just not time bound anyway. So it was all, but that doesn't matter at all. What interested me was my extreme reaction. And I knew that the story was just the entree into this reaction. And so I did use root cause inquiry on it, and I'll just read through that now. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Stephen forwarded a text from his daughter asking if her daughter could visit us for 2 days while we went to Hawaii. I saw this text in conjunction with another text from Stephen that said, there are so many ways to respond, but I think I'll go with great. Okay, I saw those two texts as going together. I became very upset and angry. I felt angry because he didn't talk to me before telling Kara great. I felt angry and imposed upon to have Elle with us in a studio apartment. If my mind were perfectly healed, nothing would upset me, not even this. So why does this upset me? Why does it bother me that he didn't talk to me first? I felt disrespected and ignored. And why does that upset me? I felt out of control and unspecial. And why does that upset me? Why does it upset me if I don't have control? I don't feel safe. And this became very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. That when I don't feel safe through my own efforts, what am I eating about myself? I believe that my safety and protection is all up to me. I don't trust God to keep me safe because I don't feel worthy of God's care. And that's as far as I got, and then I kind of did this. I saw that this was actually about two things, this belief that I need control because it's all up to me. My keeping my little world in order, and that world can become very, very limited. If something seems to impose on it, then the feelings that I'm not safe arise. And then seeing that, believing that my safety and protection was all up to me, and that me is in quotes, it's all up to this character. And that, because that character does not feel worthy. It's like, I don't want to bother you, God. You know, I'm not worthy of your care. I separated myself from you. I have done something irreparable. I'm on my own here. I am on my own, and this is all up to me. That deep unworthiness, and all from a simple request that, you know, could your granddaughter join you for 2 days on vacation? All that it would turn out to be all about me and this deep unworthiness. But I was so grateful, to open that up yet again, and to understand that these feelings reside kind of subterranean, you know, until now. And I ended up, you know, I did kind of a traditional prayer with the Holy Spirit, giving Spirit this belief in unworthiness and misplaced trust, and asked to have it removed from my mind, and that my intention and my desire is to accept God's love and safety and care. Because that is my true desire. All right, I'm going to let go of the mic. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. That was beautiful and very well done. And I also want to comment on the fact that, you know, the upset, which was a misunderstanding, the misunderstanding was cleared up before you went to the root cause inquiry. And I think many people would have been, oh, okay, I just misunderstood, and let it go, and never went back and said, wait a minute, but when I was misunderstanding, I was upset, so there's something there I need to look, right? The fact that it resolved itself would have been enough for many people to just not look at it. So I want to really congratulate you. I want to really congratulate you on looking at it, even though the situation was resolved. I'm laughing because Stephen is saying, maybe we should go back to Maui and bring the grandkids. All right, Becky, the mic is yours.
Okay, I'm also going to go with the root cause, and similar to both Stephen and Nancy, had that sense of been there, done that in this technique, and I use it a lot. But this week in particular, because we're between moving out of this rental into our house, I can't unpack anything, and so I really, really have a lot of time on my hands. I'm struggling very, very much with spare time. I know that's, you know, there's no such thing as time. I could go there, but I'm sitting here, and yesterday I got up and I'm really distraught by the what can I do. What can I do? So tired of there's games on the computer, and I can look at emails only so much time. I'm just bored. I'm tired. I'm cranked over this having nothing to do. So I put through the self-inquiry process, and I'll just cut to the chase where it really showed up for me was how much value my beliefs have about use of time, or just how many beliefs I hold. How bad am I if I'm not using time well, properly, la-da-da-da-da. And I talked to Ken about it, you know, and it's like running it by him. This is the process. And sometimes we'll help each other. Some sentence that just throws us insight. And it did. About 25 years ago, I became employed for almost a year. And in that year, I cried most of it. I spent a lot of time watching TV. But after I walked through that year of feeling like I was nothing and had no worth, no value, and listening, watching the show every day, sitting there crying to the point my second husband said, "King, but cry." And I'm going like, no. All I could do was cry. But that was a year of healing, a lot of brokenness. But this time was different. I didn't get the sense I was healing brokenness. I don't have a brokenness sense. So I went after that as to what is this if it isn't that. And it boiled down to the loving all method. I couldn't love myself mm-hmm. for doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even reach down and say I could like it. I could accept it. I couldn't even accept doing nothing. And so I stopped there, but it certainly has given me now a place to start in a different direction, something I was totally unaware of. I had all the judgments. I knew those. This is that, what do you say, is the spiritual ego. But I couldn't see, buried underneath all of that, is I can apply the loving all method to any and everything, and I found I couldn't apply it to me,
mm-hmm.
to Becky, this body, this person. And so I want to say thank you for bringing back a technique that, like I said, while I use it, now I'm seeing that maybe it's a pretty surface use, and there needs to be a lot more emphasis for me, letting go of the mic.
Yeah, thank you. You know, in our society especially, you know, most Western societies and any up-and-coming developing countries, we're valued by what we do. I mean, right, you go to a party and people, the question at the party is, you know, first, what's your name? And then second, what do you do? that's the question because that's how we determine your value. And, you know, if you're doing nothing, you know, there's a commercial on TV right now. Or what sign are you? Yeah, you must go to different parties than I do, Cheryl. I usually get the what do you do party. But, you know, there's a commercial right now. It's a Trivago commercial about, you know, booking hotel rooms. But, you know, he has different kind of people that are traveling together. And, you know, he says you wouldn't want to put them all in one room. And I forget who the other people are. I'm sure there's like a businessman there and something else. But one of them is the one he calls the sloth. And the sloth is the spiritual guy. Because the spiritual guy just meditates. And the world's opinion of him is he's the sloth. You know, so this is, you know, our society, you know, we're falling for it. We're falling for the belief. But our society as a whole certainly helps us tie our worth to what we do. But that's a false connection there. There is no connection at all between our worth and what we do. And in fact, as anyone who is you know, really awakening will say, I've heard many people saying this, as we awaken more and more and more, we get better and better at doing nothing, at just being, and really just, you know, appreciating having time just to sit on the porch and listen to the birds and, you know, watch the bees and all of that. So yeah, I'm really glad that you're looking at this. I'm glad you're having this opportunity to do nothing. And since, you know, of course you're going to be very busy very soon, but then Who knows? After you finish the move, who knows? So we'll watch and see how things unfold for you. And Sharon, the mic is yours.
Okay, I did it. My computer hasn't been great because I didn't download the new program, PowTalk. So I can totally relate to what Becky was sharing. I've gone through different stages where I've watched myself not knowing what to do with myself. I'm an artist and didn't want to do that. And, meditation, didn't want to do that. It was just sitting there and looking at all that. And there's a lot of judgments in my mind. And one of the judgments is that I have fibromyalgia and diagnosed with. And I get a lot of flare-ups. And I find that I have a lot of guilt around that. Almost like I should be healed. What am I holding on to that my body hurts so much? And so I did do the root cause. I've been able to since you started root cause or Dietrich's work, I do one or the other because I want to find out what I'm believing about myself. So there's a lot of unworthiness there. But one of the things I wanted to really share with you, Regina, is that you had mentioned to pay attention to our dreams. And I had a dream that you were in my dream. I said to you, Regina, I've detached from Jonathan. And that's been a process for me. You know that I've held this for years. Now, he's doing fine. He's in Florida, and he calls me once every 2 weeks, and he's in a halfway house. But it was funny how you showed up in my dream, so unconsciously, there's something going on, because this is a very sticky feeling with the relationship I've had with both my sons and how responsible, even though they're adults, I felt. And through this process that we're doing, the gentle healing, and I loved seeing you in my dream, and I thought, well, I should email you, but I figured I would just share it. So, of course, we'll see about, the detachment, because I never sure what's going to come up next, that's all I have right now. But thank you all for sharing such beautiful stuff. And I'm going to drop the mic, I hope, because the computer's really not working well, so I hope it drops. Okay, let's see. I think it will. Thank you. Please.
All right, yeah, thank you very much. And it's interesting because since we started doing the course again, so in the last 6 months, I've actually had several interesting dreams. I hadn't had dreams in a long time, but when I was doing the course workbook the first time, I had several interesting dreams. So there must be something about doing the course workbook that pushes things up in me. I had a dream in the last week, which I'll just share with you briefly. It was funny. To me, it's funny. In the dream, my family was in a feud with some bad guys, kind of like the Bhagavad Gita. If you guys know the story of the Bhagavad Gita, there's the Arjuna's side of the family, which really represents right-mindedness and spirituality, and they are going to war against really the dark side of their own family. But in my dream, we were in a feud with the dark side, but the dark side was not related to me at all. So in that way, it was different than the Bhagavad Gita. But somehow, you know how dreams are a little weird. I don't remember exactly how this happened, but somehow I snuck up a ramp. I snuck up a ramp and I, left my family and went to the dark side. And the leader of the dark side really liked me and promised to protect me if I would stay. And, you know, I don't remember all the details now, but there were a few concerns that I had in the dream. And he no, I wasn't in my bathing suit. And he promised to take care of every one of them. And so I really felt safe with him because I didn't have to worry about anything. He was this big, powerful guy. He ruled the entire dark side, and I was his favorite, and he was going to take care of me. So I decided to stay on the dark side because I felt safe. And my family was asking me right towards the end of the dream, just before I woke up, my family was asking me why I had left them for the dark side. And, you know, and I didn't really answer in the dream. I think that's when I woke up. But as I woke up, I was looking at it, and I thought the answer is I felt safe. And, you know, I really contemplated this dream to the best of my ability. And you know, what I saw in it is this is why we listen to ego. Again, to whatever degree we are, and obviously I listen to ego a lot less than I once did, but certainly still to a large degree, because I think, you know, everyone who isn't completely awake, for everyone for whom ego hasn't died, or that attachment hasn't been completely broken, I think we all listen to ego to a great degree. Even if it's less than before, I think that that's just the way it is. And so, obviously, when I listen to ego, it is because I still think my safety lies there. I think that the thinking mind is trying to help me be safe, and I still trust it to some degree. So I thought that was a very interesting dream. And again, I've had several interesting dreams in the past 6 months since we started the course. So even though I'm leading, you know, just like I said in the tips about surrender, really whatever we do for ourselves. You know, so like I embrace the gentle healing group. Although I embrace it as the leader, I really embrace it as the student. Right? That's how I truly embrace it, is as the student. And this is why these dreams are occurring for me. So I'm really grateful. And again, I'm very much looking forward to the fall retreat and spending time with Bob Ferguson and Tess Hughes, and maybe learning a little more about how to really look at dreams and understand dreams and use them for the purpose of healing. Because as I mentioned to you all before, I feel like that's something I'm not an expert at. Let's see, I just got a text from Sonia. Sonia's on the radio. Let's see what she says here. She says, I'm listening on the radio, so I cannot comment. Of course, now she is commenting because I'm sharing. She says, I've had bad dreams for an entire week. I figured I'm working out things as I sleep, as they are dark. Oh, wait a second. I have to actually get into my phone and finish reading this. She says, I figured I'm working out things as I sleep, as they are dark. Last night I fell asleep listening to you and Root Cause Inquiry. Oh, I hope you're okay with me sharing this. And dreamed Kurt Russell fell in love with me. Just remember, ha ha ha, Kurt is a cutie. Well, some of you may remember my old Brad Pitt dream. This was in the very first year of doing the course, and I would have to go back and find that audio and really listen to it to remember all the details. It might be fun to do that sometime. But in my Brad Pitt dream, actually in the dream, I believed the tiny mad idea. I got lost from truth, and then I found a path back to truth. And I was following the path back to truth, and all I had to do was stay on that path and follow it, and I would, and I think there was a doorway, and all I had to do was go through that door, if I remember correctly, and there was like a guru or a teacher on the other side of the door that would be able to tell me how to wake up. But instead, somehow, I remember Brad Pitt came into the dream, and Brad Pitt went a different way, and I think I followed Brad Pitt instead of walking through the doorway and asking the guru how to wake up. I don't remember. I'll have to find that old audio and listen to it. But yeah, we can have some very, very interesting dreams that really tell us what's going on with us. Nancy says she had a dream about George Clooney. Yeah. Well, listen, I really appreciate everyone's sharing, and I do want to encourage you to use root cause inquiry on your upsets. As we go through the next several weeks, we are going to learn other types of inquiry as well, because I want people just to use whatever inquiry works for them. So if root cause inquiry works really well for you, I want you to use that. But if there's another type of inquiry that seems to work better for you, I want you to use that. So I'll be introducing you to several types of inquiry over the next several weeks. You may already be familiar with some of them or all of them. And you're just going to be free to practice inquiry in whatever way best suits you and your looking and your letting go. For now, I am going to share with you from Chapter 8 of The Untethered Soul, and this is another really good chapter where I'm going to attempt, if I have the time, to just kind of read all of it. If I need to skip a little bit, I'll know which parts to skip. This is about fear, and the name of Chapter 8 is Let Go Now or Fall. And let me turn on, oh, my light is on. It's just still dark in here. Let me see if I can get this lamp. I think this lamp, yeah, the lamp has three levels, so get it higher. It's gotten a little darker since we've started this meeting an hour and 12 minutes ago. All right, so I'm reading from Chapter 8, Let Go Now or Fall. Here we go. The exploration of true self is inextricably interwoven with the unfolding of one's life. The natural ups and downs of life can either generate personal growth or create personal fears. Which of these dominates is completely dependent upon how we view change. Change can be viewed as either exciting or frightening. But regardless of how we view it, we must all face the fact that change is the very nature of life. If you have a lot of fear, you won't like change. You'll try to create a world around you that is predictable, controllable, and definable. And again, you know, to some degree or another, we all have this in us. Some people may have a greater degree of fear and therefore a greater apparent need to control the world and make it predictable and definable. And some of us may be less so, maybe only certain circumstances. But I would say, you know, unless fear is dead in us, we all have this to one degree or another. You'll try to create a world. Here's what we're really trying to do. Are you ready? You'll try to create a world that doesn't stimulate your fears. That's why we're controlling. We're trying to create a world that does not stimulate our fears. Fear, I love this sentence. This is one of my favorite sentences from this chapter. Fear doesn't want to feel itself. It's actually afraid of itself. Fear doesn't want to feel itself. It's actually afraid of itself. So you utilize the mind in an attempt to manipulate life for the purpose of not feeling fear. And I remember when I became okay with feeling fear. I'm pretty sure it was November of 2005. It was right around that time, but I think it was November of 2005. Up until November of 2005, you know, I was afraid of fear. But then at some point, right around November 2005, I came to be okay with being afraid. Like I could feel fear and be okay with it. And I knew intuitively that was a big step. To not be afraid of fear was a big step. Because now I would not be as involved in trying to avoid things, and I would be more willing to allow things and to heal rather than always trying to control and manipulate and get the world to be exactly the way I thought I needed it to be. So it continues. People don't understand that fear is a thing. It's just another object in the universe that you are capable of experiencing. You can do one of two things with fear. You can recognize that you have it and work to release it, or you can keep it and try to hide from it. Because people don't deal with fear objectively. They don't understand it. They end up keeping their fear and trying to prevent things from happening that would stimulate it. And remember what he means by keeping it. Remember in a previous chapter, he talked about when we resist things, when we close our heart, we actually keep them inside. It's by allowing things, keeping our heart open, that it moves through and is released. So when we're trying to resist fear, we're trying to avoid fear, we're actually locking that fear inside. So that's what he means by keeping it. They go through life attempting to create safety and control by defining how they need life to be in order to be okay. This is how the world becomes frightening. This may not sound frightening. It may sound safe, but it's not. If you do this, the world truly becomes threatening. Life becomes a me against it situation. When you have fear, insecurity, or weakness inside of you, and you attempt to keep it from being stimulated, there will inevitably be events and changes in life that challenge your efforts. Because you resist these changes, you feel that you are struggling with life. You feel like this person is not behaving the way they should, and this event is not unfolding the way you want. So obviously what he's saying here is what makes life feel like a struggle is the fact that we are trying to avoid having our fear triggered. And that's a constant struggle because we're walking around with the fear inside of us. Remember, what we resist, we close down on and we keep inside of us. So we have all of this fear inside of us, just waiting to be triggered, and yet we're constantly trying to juggle all of these balls and keep the world a certain way so that it doesn't get triggered. You know, it's just an impossible thing we're attempting to do. And so life becomes a struggle. He says, your definitions of desirable and undesirable, as well as good and bad, all come about because you have defined how things need to be in order for you to be okay. So think about that. Even our definitions of good and bad come about. And you know, you can see that, for example, if you're in America and you know anything about current events, you know that one of the things the Republicans want to do is repeal and replace Obamacare, right? The medical insurance system that we have in place right now. And, you know, you can watch the debate and you can see that some of the people feel that Obamacare is good and repeal and replace is bad. Other people feel that Obamacare is bad and to repeal and replace is good. Right? And where does this definition come from? These opposite definitions. It comes from what makes you feel safe. You know, do you feel safe with Obamacare and fear the unknown? Or do you feel unsafe with Obamacare and have hope and something, quote, better? Right? So it's all based on our personal fears and our attempt to control the world. We all know that we're doing this. But nobody questions it. We think we're supposed to figure out how life should be and then make it that way. Only someone who looks deeper and questions why we need the events of life to be a particular way will question this assumption. How did we come up with the notion that life is not okay just the way it is? Or that it won't be okay the way it will be? Who said that the way life naturally unfolds is not all right? The answer is fear. The part of you inside that's not okay with itself can't face the natural unfolding of life because it's not under your control. If life unfolds in a way that stimulates your inner problems, then by definition, it's not okay. It's really very simple. That which doesn't disturb you is okay. And that which does disturb you is not okay. We define the entire scope of our outer experience based on our inner problems. If you want to grow up spiritually, you have to change that. If you are defining creation based upon the most messed up part of your being, what do you expect creation to look like? It's going to look like a frightful mess. As you grow spiritually, you will realize that your attempts to protect yourself from your problems actually creates more problems. If you attempt to arrange people, places, and things so they don't disturb you, it will begin to feel like life is against you. You'll feel that life is a struggle and that every day is heavy because you have to control and fight with everything. That makes life a threat. That's why you have to worry so much. That's why you have all these dialogues going on inside your mind. You're either trying to figure out how to keep things from happening, or you're trying to figure out what to do because they did happen. You're fighting with creation. And that's what makes creation itself the most frightening thing in your life. The alternative is to decide not to fight with life. You realize and accept that life is not under your control. Life is continuously changing. And if you're trying to control it, you'll never be able to fully live it. Instead of living life, you'll be afraid of life. But once you've decided not to fight with life, you will have to face the fear that was causing you to fight. Fortunately, you don't have to keep this fear inside of you. There is such a thing as life without fear. In order to relate to this possibility, we must first have a deeper understanding of fear itself. When you have fear inside of you, the events of life invariably stimulate it. Like a rock thrown into water, the world with its continuous changes creates ripples in whatever is held within you. There's nothing wrong with that. Life creates situations that push you to your edges, all with the effect of removing what is blocked inside of you. That which is blocked and buried within you forms the root of fear. Fear is caused by blockages in the flow of your energy. Fear is the cause of every problem. It's the root of all prejudices and the negative emotions of anger, jealousy, and possessiveness. If you had no fear, you could be perfectly happy living in this world. Nothing would bother you. You'd be willing to face everything and everyone because you wouldn't have fear inside of you that could cause you disturbance. The purpose of spiritual evolution is to remove the blockages that cause your fear. The alternative is to protect your blockages so that you don't have to feel fear. And again, he goes back into, to do this, you have to control the whole world. But I think he's made that point, so I'm going to skip to the next paragraph. Eventually, you become wise enough to realize that you do not want that stuff inside of you. It doesn't matter who stimulates it. It doesn't matter what situation hits it. It doesn't matter whether it makes sense or whether it seems fair or not. And that's a very, very important point. Eventually, we don't want that stuff inside of us, right? And so every situation that happens that brings it up is a situation we're grateful for, because now we can release it. You know, we heard that expressed, for example, when Nancy and Doreen and Becky were sharing their experiences, Doreen the KKK experience and Nancy and Becky the root cause experience. There was gratitude there for seeing this in me, right? And that's a spiritually mature perspective. Now, instead of trying to control the world so it doesn't push up these uncomfortable feelings, we're grateful when the world pushes up these uncomfortable feelings, because now we can be free of them, right? Let me see. Jacqueline has written something here. Most of us would not think that our hope for a more benevolent government was fear-based. I, for example, will have insurance under whatever program there is. I still think Obama's attempt at universal health care is better than repeal and replace. Do you want to address how our personal fears relate to our political agendas, given you used this example? Wherever there are different opinions, there's not truth. You know, your idea of a more benevolent government is not the same as, you know, someone else's idea of a more benevolent government. You know, this is just the mistaken identity of I'm right. Once upon a time, I learned that anything that someone else can disagree with me on is not truth. My opinion is just my opinion, and it's better for me to drop it. So it's just clinging to the personality, right? The personality of Jacqueline believes in one type of government as a benevolent government, but a different personality. You know, we can pick, I don't know who here might be Republican. Ron's Republican, so I'll just select Ron. Ron, you know, firmly believes that that the Democrats are screwed up and would ruin the world, and that the Republicans are what will create a better world. It's just a difference of opinion. And, of course, the Tao Te Ching, as you know, the Tao Te Ching would teach us that neither side trying to correct the problems will ever correct the problems. They will only create new ones. And, in fact, we saw that with Obamacare. You know, Obamacare fixed some problems and created new ones. And whatever comes next will do the same thing. It will fix some problems and create new ones. And whatever comes next will do the same thing. I mean, that's the inevitability of it. Yeah, so you know, it's just that none of that stuff's true. I don't know what else to say. What we want to look for in ourselves is that feeling of control. That's what he's talking about, and that's where we want to let go, wherever we want to control. And even the I am right feeling is a type of, you can feel it, it's a control feeling, right? So, here we go. If you truly want to grow spiritually, you'll realize that keeping your stuff is keeping you trapped. Eventually, you'll want out at any cost. You will then realize that life is actually trying to help you. Life is surrounding you with people and situations that stimulate growth. You don't have to decide who's right or wrong. You don't have to worry about other people's issues. You only have to be willing to open your heart in the face of anything and everything, and permit the purification process to take place. When you do this, the first thing you'll see is that situations will unfold that hit your stuff. But in truth, that's exactly what's been happening your entire life. The only difference is that now you see it as a good thing because it's an opportunity to let go. And that, I would say that's not the only difference. When you quit trying to protect yourself, the pain in the beginning, at least in my experience, actually gets deeper. You know, so the unworthiness, you feel it more. The guilt, you feel it more. The anger, you feel it more. The jealousy, you feel it more. The anxiousness, you feel it more. But the reason you're feeling it more is because you're not protecting it. And when you were protecting it, you were stuffing it down. And so because you were stuffing it down, it was somewhat numbed, right? To some degree numbed. Now that you're not protecting it and you're allowing it to rise up so that it can be released, it's no longer numbed, which means you feel it more, right? So in the beginning, in fact, a lot of you have said in one form or another, oh my gosh, there's so much confusion or there's so much anger. And I'm like, yay! You know, I'm so glad. Because if you guys are, pardon this, but if you're feeling worse, that means you're getting better. Right? Because that's the first sign. That's the first sign. You're starting to stop protecting yourself. And because you're starting to stop protecting yourself, you're also starting to feel worse. You know, it's like the old saying that it's always darkest before the dawn, right? So I know from my own experience that's not a bad sign, but I also remember when I was in your place and all this stuff was coming up, you know, the ego's interpretation is, you know, you're a lousy course student, right? You're no good at this. I mean, look at you. You hardly ever feel peace, or you were feeling peace last week, but now this week, you know, you've fallen backwards. But that's not true. Remember, the course also says you do not know your advances from your retreats. You see, moving through the darkness, although it may feel like falling backwards, it's actually moving forward. Okay, so continuing with the reading, the stuff that holds you down periodically rears its head. When it does, let it go. And by let it go, he means open your heart, allow it, rest, accept, and trust. You simply permit the pain to come up into your heart and pass through. If you do that, it will pass. If you are sincerely seeking truth, you'll do that every time. You're going to quit trying to protect yourself. This is the beginning and the end of the entire path. You surrender yourself to the process of emptying yourself. There is a law you will learn very early in the game because it's an unavoidable truth. You will learn it early, but you will fall many times while trying to adhere to it. Whoops, where'd you guys go? Oh, there you are. Sorry, Pal Talk disappeared for a second. Okay, you will learn it early, but you will fall many times while trying to adhere to it. The law is very straightforward. When your stuff gets hit, let go right then because it will be harder later. Yeah, I've learned that. In fact, the way that I have stated the rule in my teaching sometimes is it's always easier to let go at the first thought. So, you know, like if I don't like, you know, something that someone said, you know, let's say I don't like the fact that, and this isn't true, but let's pretend like I don't like the fact that, you know, Jacqueline asked a question during the reading. If I just believe that thought and don't question it, it's going to grow. And then, you know, Jacqueline does something another day and then another day and then another day, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And one day, you know, Jacqueline's presence is going to be a big problem for me. It's always easier to let go at the first thought. And if you can't let go at the first, the second. And if you not the second, the third. The earlier that you let go, the easier it's going to be. The more that you believe your thoughts and try to avoid things that make you uncomfortable, the harder it's going to be when it finally comes up. And this is one reason unworthiness is so hard. We've believed it so much. Right? We've believed it so much, and that makes it so very, very hard to let go of. It won't be easier if you, let's see, it won't be easier to think about it, talk about it, or try to release only part of it at a time. If you want to be free to the core of your being, you must let go right away because it will not be easier later. In order to live by this law, you have to understand its principles. First, you must be aware that there is something within you that needs to be released. And remember, whenever you're upset, this is always true. It doesn't matter what it is, right? Whenever you are upset, there is something to be released. And this is step one. Realize that. There's something in me to be released. You must then be aware that you, the one who notices the stuff coming up, are distinct from what you're experiencing. You are noticing it, but who are you? So, for example, we said there is no cruelty in God and none in me. Well, you know, I think Doreen did a great job with the KKK, but let's pretend like, I'm going to make up an alternative universe here. Let's pretend like Doreen went to this KKK rally and ended up getting really annoyed with someone. Doesn't matter whether it was a KKK person or one of the hippies passing out crystals, right? Let's imagine she got really annoyed. And of course, she didn't look at it right away in my alternate universe. And so the annoyance grows and the annoyance grows. And let's imagine, you know, there's so much anger energy and hate energy there. She gets sucked right into it and she ends up throwing a rock at this person and swearing at them. And she gets arrested and she's in jail. And now because she's in jail, she can now look at it, right? She's got nothing else to do but look at it. And so she goes back and she looks at this and she thinks, oh, I am cruel. Look what I did. I am cruel. Right? Even though the lesson for the day was there's no cruelty in God and none in me. What this is saying is don't get what you see in yourself confused with you. The cruelty is the object, or the fear is the object, or the jealousy, or the unworthiness, or the anger. It's not you, it's the object. You are the one watching it. And you can practice self-inquiry with these types of things, right? So if you did throw a rock at someone and swore at them and now you're in jail looking at it, you can close your eyes and you can look at that guilt. By now you probably are going to be experiencing guilt, right? You can look at that guilt and you can see the guilt and you can notice that you see the guilt. And you can ask, what sees this guilt? What is the eye that sees the guilt? And start turning your attention towards the nature. So he's saying it's very important to distinguish between yourself and the objects of fear, guilt, cruelty, jealousy, confusion, you know, whatever may be coming up. You must then be aware that you, the one who notices the stuff coming up, are distinct from what you're experiencing. You are noticing it, but who are you? This place of centered awareness is the seat of the witness, the seat of the true self. That is the only seat from which you can let go. Let's say you notice that something in your heart gets hit. You let go and stay in the seat of awareness. What you are noticing will pass. If you don't let go and instead get lost in the disturbed feelings and thoughts that arise, you'll see a sequence of events unfold so quickly you won't know what hit you. If you don't let go, you'll notice that the energy that got stimulated in your heart works like a magnet. It's a phenomenally attractive force that will pull your consciousness into it. The next thing you know, you won't be there, meaning you won't be able to distinguish between the awareness, the noticer, and the energy because the attention goes so deeply into the energy. You know how they say tofu? Tofu takes on the taste of whatever it's cooked in. And actually, I saw a brief thing on TV today where they were cooking cauliflower, and they said the same thing about cauliflower, that cauliflower takes on the taste of whatever it's cooked in. Well, what he's really saying here is that your attention takes on the taste of whatever it's cooked in. So if you let your attention go deep enough into that anger or deep enough into that jealousy or fear or whatever, it's going to take on the taste of that, and you are not going to be able to distinguish between the awareness that is watching and the energy itself. And I talked about this happening in that Root Cause Inquiry audio that you just listened to. I mentioned that sometimes things just take you over, and you won't have enough sanity to practice Root Cause Inquiry. Because, again, you have to practice Root Cause Inquiry with the seed of centeredness, right? So I said when that happens, just practice rest, accept, and trust, and wait until your attention begins to recede a little bit. You're not so in the middle of it, and you can find your sanity again, and then practice Root Cause Inquiry, right? So he's talking about the same kind of thing, that your sanity can literally get lost in the energy if you let it go far enough. He says, you will leave the seat of objective awareness from which you saw your heart begin to react, and you will get involved in the shifting energies coming from your heart. Sometime later, you'll come back and realize you weren't there. You'll come back and realize that you were totally lost in your stuff. Then you will hope that you didn't say or do anything you'll regret. You'll look at the clock and 5 minutes will have gone by, or an hour, or even a year. You can lose your clarity for quite some time. Where did it go? How did you come back? We will address these questions shortly. But what really matters is that when you're seeing clearly, you're not gone anymore. You're simply sitting in the seat of centered awareness, watching your stuff get hit. As long as you're watching, you're not getting lost in it. And again, this is when the sanity to some degree has returned, and this would be a good time to practice Root Cause Inquiry and find out what got you so upset and what caused you to get so sucked in, right? Take the opportunity to learn from your mistakes. Remember, I said mistakes are one of our best teachers. And if we don't learn from our mistakes, we're just going to make the same mistake again. You know, so the way that we get wiser is by seizing the opportunity to learn from our mistakes. And yeah, practice time out. Absolutely. I used to give myself timeouts. The key is to understand that if you don't let go immediately, the disturbing force of the activated energy draws the focus of your consciousness. As your consciousness gets immersed in the disturbance, you lose your clear seat of self. And again, this is why he's saying it's important to let go as soon as you notice something coming up, which means as soon as you notice something coming up, open the heart, move into rest, accept, and trust, close your eyes, allow it to be. And the sooner you can do that, the faster it will actually move through, unless it's something that's been repressed for a really long time. It might take a little more time to move through because there's a lot more stuff that was in storage, right? He says, this leaving the seat of the self is not generally a willful act. In other words, you don't decide, okay, that's it, I'm going to get angry. It's not like a conscious decision. He says, the laws of attraction cause it to happen. Consciousness is always drawn to the most distracting object, like the bumped toe, the loud noise, or the hurting heart. The consciousness goes to the place that distracts it the most. That's what we mean when we say it was so loud it caught my attention. It drew your consciousness into it. When a blockage gets hit, this same attraction takes place, and the consciousness gets pulled to the source of discomfort. After the discomfort settles down and lets you go, you'll naturally drift back towards your higher seat of awareness. He kind of repeats himself, as you guys have noticed, which is really good, except, you know, with time I can skip some of what he's repeating and go on to something else. So he's talking about when our consciousness gets pulled into the disturbance. He says, things that looked beautiful now look ugly. Things you liked now look dark and depressing. But nothing has really changed. It's just that you're looking at life from the seat of disturbance. Each of these shifts in your perception should remind you to let go. The moment you start seeing that you don't like the people you used to like, the moment you start seeing that your life looks really different, the moment it all starts to get negative, let go. So the moment your mind goes to not enough money, the moment your mind goes to being annoyed with a particular personality, the moment your mind goes to I'm bored, the moment your mind goes to I'm too busy, right? The moment it goes to something negative, that's the time to open up, feel the energy of that, and let it go. And again, he's emphasizing that if we don't let go early, the moment it shifts to something negative, that it's going to be more difficult to let go later. And he says if you get deep enough into it, and I've experienced this many times, if you allow your attention to go deep enough into it, then the blockage has to run its course. So once you get pulled in so far, then you just have to wait until it settles down. Because again, you've lost your seat of consciousness, right? You've lost your seat of consciousness. And yeah, let it go would mean not following up with additional thoughts. It means sitting in your seat of sanity immediately and watching it. But yeah, so rest, accept, and trust. Rest is rest the mind, not following the thoughts. Accept the feeling and trust this is healing. That's really what he's talking about. And the sooner you get into that, the better. But, we have to be honest with ourselves, as Doreen demonstrated for us earlier. Like if I have a thought that I, don't like someone that I did like until a moment ago when they said something or did something, right? I have to be honest with myself that, ooh, I'm feeling right now like I don't like this person. I have to be honest with myself. And then I have to open up, either close my eyes if I can or just go within and feel. But feel that not liking. Take a deep breath and let it leave me. Right? But if I lie to myself and I don't, and I pretend like I do like the person when I don't right now, or whatever, then it's going to go longer. And again, I'm likely to get more sucked into it. And as I mentioned, and as he mentioned, there does come a point where we get sucked so deeply into something that then it just has to run its course. So what we really want to try to do is be as sane as soon as possible so we don't become completely insane, right? He says, talking about how when you get pulled so deeply into it that you have to let it run its course, he says, you have no idea how big a step down that is. It's one thing if the disturbance is going on inside of you, but the moment you allow it to express itself, the moment you let the energy move your body, like throw the rock or cuss somebody out or talk about somebody behind their back, right, because you got completely pulled into it, now you're acting from it. He says the moment you allow it to express itself, the moment you let that energy move your body, you have descended to another level. Now it's almost impossible to let go. If you start yelling at somebody, if you actually tell someone how you feel about them from this state of non-clarity, you have involved that person's heart and mind in your stuff. Now both of your egos are involved. Once you externalize these energies, you will want to defend your actions and make them look appropriate, right? So you're getting pulled in. The forces are pulling you in even deeper. You're being pulled further down. You fall into the darkness, and then you manifest the darkness. You're literally taking the energy of this blockage, passing it on. And, of course, as we know, what we give, we receive. He said it's like painting the world with your stuff. You put more of that kind of energy into the environment, and it comes back to you. So I haven't heard this recently, but I have heard in the past many people saying, let's pretend again that I'm angry with, I don't want to pick on Jacqueline again. So I'm angry with Sharon because she had a dream about me, and I don't like that for some reason. So let's pretend like I'm angry at Sharon. And, you know, I don't say anything during gentle healing because I want to look, you know, enlightened. But I call her up or I email her afterwards. I say, you know what, Sharon? If you have any dreams about me, you know, just keep that out of gentle healing, right? Well, now how's Sharon going to feel? You see, now this thing has grown. I'm lost in it. And now unless Sharon's enlightened or able to stay with her sanity, she's getting pulled in it. And the thing grows. So what he is really saying is acting on our insanity is the worst thing we can do. Now, again, we don't want to believe that we're guilty. He's not saying that we're guilty if we do it. He just says that we're extending our insanity. And so what we want to try and do, let's say, again, I got upset with Sharon for mentioning me. What I want to do very quietly is I want to notice my upset, whatever it is, feel it in my heart. You know, maybe after class do a root cause inquiry on it so I have a better understanding of it. And rest, accept, and trust with it. Maybe say a prayer, ask that it be healed. Maybe practice self-inquiry. Notice that it's an object. I'm the watcher. But never, ever, 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 ever say anything to Sharon about it. I don't need to involve her in this. It's my crap. I don't need to drag her into my crap. And again, I've heard people say, you know, if you don't tell Sharon, and of course, you know, this is just the imaginary situation here, but they would say to me, if you don't tell Sharon what you think, you're being dishonest. That's not true. I'm not being dishonest by choosing to remain sane to the best of my ability. So you don't have to tell people what you think. You have to realize that your thinking is insane and you choose to step into sanity as soon as possible and let people go on their merry way, right? Let them be free. And of course, he continues about how low you can go if you start acting on it. He says that if you act on these things, what's really going to happen is your system, your sanity is going to become weakened, and then another blockage is going to get hit, and then another, and you just fall down until it's an absolute mess. He says, what if all you had to do to avoid all of this was to let go in the beginning? If you had, you would have gone up instead of down. When a blockage gets hit, it's a good thing. It's time to open up internally and release the blocked energy. If you let go and permit the purification process to take place inside, that blocked energy will be released. When it's released and allowed to flow up, it becomes purified and you merge back into your center of consciousness. This energy then strengthens you in this way by letting it be released instead of weakening you when you keep it and act on it. You begin to go up and up, higher and higher, and you have learned the secret of ascent. The secret of ascent is to never look down, always look up. He says, if you see disturbed energies within you, it's okay. Don't think that you don't have blockages left to release. Just sit in the seat of awareness and never leave, no matter what goes on. He says, if you do fall along the way, just get up as soon as you can and forget about it. He says, if you feel shame, let it go. If you feel fear, let it go. All of these are just remnants of the blocked energy. Always let go as soon as you're aware that you didn't. Always let go at the soonest time that you can. The bigger it is, the bigger the thing that's coming up, the higher the reward of letting it go. But also the worse the fall if you don't. So again, these are things that you're all experiencing, so this is very timely teaching, right? Let go as soon as possible. If you don't, you know, there may be guilt or shame that follows. Let go of that, right? As soon as possible. Just keep letting go to the best of your ability as soon as you can. And that's how we heal. All right. So, let me go ahead and give you all your assignment for next week then. Workbook lessons 174 to 180, and those are all, I believe, review lessons, if I remember correctly. 181, I think, is the first new lesson. Or it might be 180 is the first, but I think they're mostly review lessons. You're going to practice daily awareness, watching awareness meditation for 15 to 20 minutes each day, and practice the loving all method. So that's all pretty typical. And then for those of you who have listened to all of the Regina Donacre's audios, here comes another one that you've probably heard before. You're going to listen to letting go of the I am bad belief. And I'm sure that that's in the post that Ken has prepared for me. I'll put the audio there and then post it soon. But you can also find it at reginadonacres.com under the classics, a second dozen classics, and it's number 3. Again, that's letting go of the I am bad belief. And remember, when you're thinking, oh my gosh, I've listened to this 2 or 3 times and here we are listening to it again, I'm listening to it too. I do everything I ask you guys to do. And I'll tell you, from Regina's perspective, there's nothing more boring than listening to Regina. Because I know everything that I say. But yeah, every now and then I giggle. Because every now and then I'll hear myself tell a funny story. And so every now and then it's a little funny listening to an old teaching from my perspective. But yeah, it's also pretty boring. But I also hear things that are nice reminders for me. Right? You know, it's like, oh, I'm glad I heard that again. I had forgotten that little tip. So even I get something out of listening to my own audios. So letting go of the I am bad belief, something that's really important for all of us to do. So that's it, everybody. Have a wonderful week with your review lessons, and I will see you again next Tuesday night, okay? Mwah! Bye-bye, everyone.